This podcast is sponsored by IQBar. Your favorite clean, functional, delicious nutrition brand is raising the bar with a little help from Thomas Keller, Michelin star chef of the French Laundry. IQBar and Thomas Keller have teamed up to create a salted caramel chip protein bar and yuzu mango hydration mix. With toasted macadamia nuts, rich caramel flavor, and brain-boosting nutrients, this bar is like having a Michelin star meal in your pocket. Pair it with the taste bud tingling yuzu mango IQ mix hydration mix, packed with magnesium and adaptogens to improve clarity and mood. With Keller's culinary excellence and IQ Bar's commitment to great taste and clean ingredients, this limited edition collaboration is simply mwah. And the best part is that 10% of sales go directly to Chef Keller's nonprofit, Mentor, that supports aspiring young chefs. Great taste, great nutrition, great mission. Go to IQBar.com today and enter promo code KELLER20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products plus free shipping. That's IQBAR.com, promo code KELLER20.
Do you really think all this is an accident? You think we crashed on this place by coincidence? Especially this place? We were brought here for a purpose, for a reason, all of us. Each one of us was brought here for a reason.
Brought here. And who brought us here, John?
The island.
Look, you want to push the button, you do it yourself.
If it's not real, then what are you doing here, Jack? Why did you come back? Why do you find it so hard to believe?
Why do you find it so easy?
It's never been easy!
It's a leap of faith, Jack.
Two players, two sides. One is light, one is dark.
I see you in another life, brother. We have to go back!
We're going to need to watch that again.
Hello and welcome to the Storm and Lost Rewatch podcast. My name is Dave Gonzalez, and this week we're all using the song You All Everybody to sell our various products. I am selling awls, like for leatherworking, one awl for you and everybody.
My name is Joanna Robinson, and I am using the tremendous song You All Everybody to sell ewes, as in female sheep, as in Joaquin Phoenix, turn off the podcast, lamb for to eat. So yeah. Well, I don't feel great about this joke. Neil?
And I'm Neil Miller, and I'm selling Universal Studios Weekend Pass discount codes. I try to think of like the trashiest thing possible.
It's good. It's the what's from our time period that would be the You All Everybody like substitute. I feel like
what has a good jingle.
You remember that Vine song Get Free that was basically only in commercials? That's what I would throw.
So this is my prompt. Can I do it now?
Oh. Yeah, let's do it now. Why not? Oh, you guys listening to the Storm Lost podcast for Fire Plus Water Season 2, Episode 12, I believe?
Yep.
And Joanna has a question.
Well, so my first question was, like, what do you think the biggest sellout of a song into a commercial is? Like, the Who Are You was used for Walmart. That's a big one. Joe Cocker's The Little Help from My Friends was used in a Volkswagen commercial. Like a Rock, like, so some of these things that I only know is jingle, like a Rock, which is a Chevy thing, is a Seeger song.
Seeger?
Yeah. Or Like a Good Neighbor is a Barry Manilow song, but I just know it as a State Farm jingle. So you know, these are, I have a question if you've,
wow, Barry Manilow really You All Everybody that one.
Right? Like, if I say, like a good neighbor, you're like, State Farm is there, right?
So, right.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That might
True
be the
Colors,
one.
True Colors was for, like, Kodak, right? That was mm-hmm. one. I don't know if you guys like had any. Wasn't there like one with Moby? Or is Moby the one who was like, never? You will never hear a Moby song in a commercial.
No, I feel like there's
Moby
multiple
Moby was the one who
Mobys.
Sold like all of sold like all of Play to everybody.
Yeah, okay. For me, it's
Play is famously profitable because of that.
It's like Moby. There's a bunch of them. Coldplay. There's a ton of them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure that that one band. What are they called?
The Beatles.
There's a lot of truck commercials. No, it's like a modern. Something, Imagine Dragons, they were actually created by the commercial marketing industry to be a band to only generate music to be used for commercials and the openings of sporting games.
I could believe that. Yeah. Imagine Dragons
that's
is
my theory.
In the modern age.
Spoiler that this song will be maybe important sometime in the future of Lost. The Beach Boys sold Good Vibrations to Sunkist for 1978 ads. I would love to watch an ad that has Sunkist.
Oh, what about the California Raisins singing Motown?
Heard it through the grapevine.
Yeah. Heard it through the grapevine.
Volkswagen, I think, for a long time had the best music in their commercials, right? Because they had like Nick Drake, Pink Moon was an iconic one. Like, there's just like, there's the like, da, da, da song. Like, there's a bunch of like really good like Volkswagen songs. I think people just.
Oh, yeah, the da, da, da song. I think that was a song that only existed.
But it's a real song, but people think it's just the Volkswagen song, right? So I don't know. Like, if you guys are listening and you have thoughts, are there like songs that you only identify with one thing? Like, for me, when I hear Mr. Blue Sky, for me, that is, the Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind trailer is Mr. Blue Sky for me, but it's been used in so many things, including, I think, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. But, like, it's been used in, like, so many commercials, but I'm like, yeah, but that's the Eternal Sunshine jingle. Sorry, everyone else. So, I don't know if that was a weird prompt. I just thought it was interesting thinking about hearing songs in commercials and being like, you're like, oh, really? They sold a song?
Yeah. Well, in this example this week, it's more of a, how low can you go to get some drug money? Sort of thing.
How many diapers do we wear? P.S. I want to know more about the other two members of Driveshaft. What are they doing?
Yeah, where are they now?
Got to save it for the Secret Lost spinoffs series.
The VH1.
Those are characters ripe for crossover.
Is there a Lost
behind the music?
Is there a Lostpedia article just on their various tattoos? Because I would read it. Also, yes, I would watch the fake VH1 Behind the Music about Driveshaft. I watched the Behind the Music about Fleetwood Mac this morning. It's a good show.
So that's kind of like Driveshaft.
Similar, yet more hits.
We're a podcast about rewatching the show Lost. It's now streaming on Hulu in the U.S. and soon coming, I guess, TV Guide with some ads. If this is your first time joining us for the show, you should know we're on season 2, episode 12. That means we have all of season 1 and 11 previous episodes of season 2 covered in the podcast. Our podcast is split into two different sections. First, we call the Calm, and we'll only be covering episodes we've watched for this rewatch so far, so nothing beyond season 2, episode 12. And then the second half of the podcast we call the Storm, because that's where the spoilers are, and that's where we get to talk about this episode in the context of the entire series of Lost. It's a storm of spoilers at the end of the show, and that means you go to patreon.com/stormofspoilers to support us as we adventure through the world of Lost. Subscribing will not only support the show, but will give you some cool bonus content, which is outlined at patreon.com/stormofspoilers. Before we get back into the downward slide of Charlie and Driveshaft, Joanna, do we have any reviews or ways people have reached out to contact us this week?
We do. We've got some great reviews. Thank you guys so much for leaving us some nice reviews. I really appreciate it. I will just start with this one from Life is a Mixtape, which is a great book, by the way. The book is Love is a Mixtape, but Life is also a mixtape. Why not? 5 stars. Locke is not a villain. It's the title of this review. I'm so happy this group has taken up the Lost rewatch. I'm going along for the ride on my 6th rewatch. Don't judge me. It's great to do so with these insights and discussions that I didn't participate in the first time around. I started the show while they were finishing season 3 with the old Netflix mailed DVDs and quickly realized they couldn't keep up, so I had to mix in Blockbuster and then just said, oh, forget it, and bought season 3 on DVD. Joanna, Dave, and Neil make it a lot of fun to rewatch and do so while acknowledging the silliness and having reverence for the greatness. I'm thoroughly enjoying this and looking forward to spending the 2 years with them. If you're a first timer or a passionate fan like myself, this is a must. I'm here for it all, except the wild idea that John Locke is anything but the most savvy and endearing character of all time. Fight me.
Well, she did give
for
us
2 years.
They did give us 5 stars. So, there
yes.
you go.
I have to fight them now.
All right. And then I've got a quick email, and then I have another one that I'll read in the storm. But this one is from Anthony from California, Bay Area. Joanna's stomping grounds, I believe, he writes. I want to say that how much I love your podcast. I've seen the show multiple times and even watched all of Chronologically Lost. Watching it again with you guys has made me love the show even more, warts and all. I now have new slang, such as the old clickety-clack that I can't believe I didn't have before. I'm sure you're getting a ton of emails in defense of Jack, so hopefully my email isn't unwelcome as one to add to the pile, but I want to bring up 2 things regarding Jack that make me still completely love the character on this viewing. Number one, specifically, Jack asking Kate to stay behind. This is in reference, this is Joanna talking now, this is in reference to last week's episode where we talked about Jack making Kate stay behind for what seemed like, to me, plot reasons. Okay, back to the email. You say there is no reason, but that is not how I see it. Jack is loading up for a fight. He is 100% expecting to have a fight with the others to get Michael back. So him not wanting Kate to come along is him not wanting any harm to come to her. Well, that is problematic in a different way. That is why I can at least understand Jack's motivation here. I think that Jack will have to start shooting despite being outnumbered, but then Kate was revealed and she is his weakness. As I said, it's problematic, but in a different way. Number two, you mentioned that the show frames Jack as a hero, and while I think that's true, I also think the show never hesitates to point out that Jack is kind of a terrible leader. It was a job that was thrust upon him, and at almost every point he makes some terrible decision that the show highlights. I don't think the show wants us to think he is some savior. He's an extremely flawed person that shouldn't be leading at all, but was thrust into the position. So let's see what happens. This is why I still love Jack, but I'm still here for all the Jack dumping because he's often such a screw-up. Again, thanks for the podcast. And Anthony asked that I read that email in a California accent, which I think I did perfectly. So if you want to email us, you can email us, hoststormpodcast.com. You can leave us a review on iTunes. We really appreciate it. You can go over to stormpodcast.com, our website, to find out our calendar of events and everything that's happening. You can follow along at stormpodcast on Twitter if you want to see the latest of what our amazing producer, Diana, is up to. So that is all the ways to contact us. Over to you.
Fantastic. That means we're ready to go back to the island. Neil, what happened this week on Lost?
Oh boy. This week on Fire Plus Water. This is an episode that was directed by Jack Bender, which is, a plus. It was written by Edward Kitsis and Adam Horowitz. It aired on January 25th, 2006, and it takes place on days 54 through 56 on the island. 2 whole days. In flashbacks, we witness the final days of Driveshaft. First, Liam's drug addiction rips the band apart. Then Charlie starts to do some drugs. And then Liam gets clean and bails, but only after selling Charlie's piano, which feels like a huge dick move there at the end. It's an origin story for Charlie's drug habit and family-related baggage. On the island, Charlie begins to have intense dreams about his family, during which he also walks around and steals babies from tents. The only person who doesn't think he's taking drugs again is Mr. Echo. They land on baptism for Aaron as a solution to Charlie's visions. Elsewhere, Hurley bonds with Sawyer, who encourages him to seize his moment with Libby. They go on an awkward but cute, but also maybe mysterious laundry date. Back on the beach, John Locke spends some time looking on ominously, then follows Charlie into the jungle and confiscates his secret stash of drugs. Jack, meanwhile, spends a lot of time hanging out with Ana Lucia, which has not gone unnoticed by the others, including Kate. Ana Lucia also points out that more people should be banging on this hot people show. It's maybe Ana Lucia's most likable moment. After lighting the jungle on fire, Charlie steals Aaron and tries to dunk him in the ocean. And it goes so horribly wrong that John Locke punches Charlie in the face. John Locke, usually not quite so punchy. The episode ends with Jack stitching Charlie back together, Locke securing the drugs in the hatch, and Claire and Aaron being quietly baptized by Mr. Echo. You know, just in case. Also, there's a very long shot of Charlie being super dark. Boom. Lost. This week's fun fact, Michael does not appear in this episode. So there you go.
Is that the funnest fact about this episode?
That's the most fun fact about this episode. This week's opening question, what do you think John Locke's reasons are at this moment for not just destroying the drugs? Like, why put them in the hatch other than to remind us that John Locke knows the codes to the hatch?
Future goopin'.
Oh yeah. Some good goopin'.
Yeah.
I think
goopin'.
I've said before that heroin seems like something that would be good to have around for medical situations, so that makes sense to me.
Yeah, and I guess the only people who have, like, well, other than the first time they destroyed it, then Echo burned the plane, right? Yeah, so, okay. Jack's, I think it's John's like, seeing he's the just trying medicinal to make value.
The most fun room on the island with all the guns and the heroin in it. So this if he ever gets locked in there again, he's got something to do.
Imagine Jack on the tour with Ana Lucia being like, oh yeah, this is the hatch. There's the bedroom. There's the shower that works that people seem to be using. And there is the guns and heroin room.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. With our nice Virgin Mary heroin statues. It's all the rage on the island. Yeah, there's this episode. There's another Charlie episode. In the past, we've been not liking Charlie episodes. I think last week on the podcast, we got a very good email about trying to view Charlie episodes from another angle. And it was a very good email to lead into this week's episode, where Charlie has a lot of inexplicable behavior if you are not somewhat familiar with the Christian religion. I think this episode does the bare minimum in order to explain what it's trying to do. But for instance, if you've never seen like Leonardo da Vinci's painting, like the Baptism of Jesus by John the Baptist, then Charlie's vision's going to come out of way out of left field for you. And I think the solution of we should baptize Aaron would even more so be like, well, you know, just because the kid's near the water doesn't mean that's the way to save him. But I do think it's the episode attempting to meld it all together and make it distinctly Charlie by this like very Catholicism based episode. Well, I guess it's sort of broad Christianity, because also with like Catholicism, I don't think Claire could necessarily be baptized without a little bit more to do. Because oh, go ahead.
This is Mr. Echo's Funtime Island Church.
Right, Mr. Echo's only kind of a priest anyway.
Yeah, at Mr. Echo's Funtime Island Church, you can be baptized if you're an adult and you're like, shit, I've crash-landed on an island, I need to get my stuff straight. You can baptize a baby without a godparent there because maybe your baby's father figure is going through a rough, delusional time right now. Like, everyone, come on down to Mr. Echo's Funtime. Like, basically, I think Mr. Echo is running a Unitarian Universalist church. I don't think he's there trying to do, like, strict Catholicism, especially since
Mr. Echo's Island Church is like the Universal Life Church.
Yeah.
If you want to become a priest, just give us 10 minutes. All right. You're a priest.
Put on this necklace, your dead brother's necklace, and you're fine. This is fine. You're a priest now.
I think I know, and it's interesting you mentioned the religion. I think I know what makes this episode not quite reach its potential. I think they kind of mess up by having the flashback be about the drugs. Because if the flashback was more about, like, say, a story about Charlie's religious upbringing, maybe it connects better. But it's weird because the show is constantly like, remember the drugs, even though it's not, you know, Charlie, what's actually happening to Charlie is not really about the drugs, you know, like he's, as far as we know, he's not actually using them. So he really is having some sort of weird vision. I just feel like maybe it's a mispair with the flashback.
Yeah, no, I like that. I think it would have been interesting to watch, like, maybe Charlie's journey through like faith and like disillusionment or something, you know, like what it meant to him as a kid versus like maybe how it he felt like it wasn't there for him as an adult or whatever it is. I think that's like a really interesting.
Yeah, and I think this is part of what we sort of talk about when we sort of talk about, I guess, the not great idea that the show keeps coming back to Charlie's drug addiction, because it's like, I don't know, it just feels like the show's kind of punishing the character, which feels weird, you know?
It makes the flashbacks super predictable, because the dream sequences are great. I love the opening piano thing.
It's not like we need to see the origin.
You don't need
to see the origin story of Charlie's drug habit every time, is what I'm saying.
Right. Piano on the
we've already sort of seen it.
Piano on the Beach is great. Bad Dad Meat Cleaver, less great. Apparently, Bad Dad Meat Cleaver is like a Beatles reference, one that I don't get, and I didn't know there was a Beatles reference I don't get. But
oh, Headless Baby Dolls.
Yeah.
Oh, that makes sense to me. For Meet the Beatles, they had like a original cover that I don't think got released in the U.S.
Right.
or was released and was heavily censored, where it was raw meat and Headless Baby Dolls.
So that's what they're going for.
Oh.
But I still don't like Bad Dad Meat Cleaver, because I'm just like, we get it. Oh, Charlie is a bad dad too? No way. Oh, we don't see his face and he just waggles a bloody meat cleaver in Charlie's direction, being like, you'll never save anyone, Charlie boy, like whatever. It's, I don't know, that's a little much, but I
damn
love
it, Charlie's,
I
mean, mind, you know, are so on the nose.
I love in Piano on the Beach, though. Love it, love it, love it.
Right.
I feel like in the context of the episode, to jump to this really weird visuals defense, though, can you imagine being in the writer's room and being like, Charlie's dad was a butcher. He has to care for the baby. He's worried for the baby. Charlie's a musician. Oh my God, that Beatles cover. Meat and baby. And just being like, we're really cooking now, guys. We're cracking the Charlie story.
And everybody was so proud that they had to get that in the episode, no matter what.
How many like Mary statues do you envision this Lost writers' room going through in their sessions? Listen, I'm not. Listen, don't sue me for slander or libel. I don't think anyone was doing drugs in the Lost writers' room. It's just the way you described it sounded like coked out writers' room, like bro, babies,
bro. Listen,
Beatles.
Listen up.
Bad dads, are you with me?
It's 2:30 a.m. They've just smashed open their ninth Virgin Mary statue.
Well, and this is Lost season 2 in the middle of being, you know, high on its season 1 success and planting these like crazy mysteries. We have like our first straight out stylized vision that I could remember. We've had, you know, maybe visions, maybe dreams before. We've had like some confusing cuts. It's of course an island of mystery with horses and stuff and polar bears running around, but we haven't had like full on living inside of a painting slash sleepwalking baby napping. It seems like there's a lot of I don't know, the writers are getting more comfortable on getting weirder and having us just accept it, I think, because Neil's right.
I don't know, like John saw his mom in the jungle, like, I mean, beyond Jack seeing his dad in the jungle, like John's mom in the jungle strikes me as even weirder for some reason, right? Because she has her like fur coat on.
Tall soggy Walt.
I don't know that I would say that.
I mean,
like
there's
sleep
horse.
Well, I mean, there's falls up horse. The stairs, falls down the stairs was also like shot weirdly.
That's what I'm saying.
This reminds me of that, where it's like, yeah, it's the first thing that feels like it's not just like an item out of place or one person or horse out of place, but it's like a specific, like you can tell he's having a vision.
It's like all of them at once. So we get some whispers. We get Claire and his mom with the halos. We get the crashing of the drug plane in the background. We get the weird yellow lighting effect. We get the dove. It's a lot. It's, I don't know. Lost, it's not that Lost hasn't done Island of Mystery things, but they haven't done like a we're living inside a symbolic painting. You need to.
This is the first time they're like, let's do a little bit more of an abstract metaphor this time. Just for fun.
Yeah, and we should say for the listeners who haven't been hanging out on Lostpedia, and you shouldn't because there's a lot of spoilers there. But yeah, the visual of Charlie's mom and Claire is taken from a Leonardo da Vinci painting, The Baptism of Christ. You know, yes.
And also, yeah, if you look really closely at the painting, Hurley is in the background.
In that sweet, sweet robe.
In that sweet robe.
No, I mean, but Hurley's robe is actually the same peachy color as the loincloth that Jesus is wearing. And Jesus and Hurley have the same hair. So, you know, just saying, if you want to say Hurley is Jesus, I won't argue with you because Hurley's the best. So, you know.
I think that painting is somewhere in one of the flashbacks.
Yes.
And then I think it's the exact story that Echo tells Claire later on when he's talking about baptism. So I do think they like planted it, but it's still kind of a big swing to, at least for me, to assume a certain amount of familiarity on an Island of Mystery show where, like, it could have been, yeah, like John Malak's mother in a fur coat, and we weren't supposed to think about, like, a, you know, medieval Christianity depiction, Renaissance. Sorry, I didn't want to throw.
No, I'm not saying we're not supposed to think of the painting. I think we are. I think at the very least you can tell, even if you don't know the specific painting, you could tell that this is a reference to like Renaissance, like art, like religious iconography. We've already talked about Claire wearing like the Virgin Mary blue, and here she is like dressed as, you know, like whatever.
Yeah, with the halos, which is,
yeah, but I just don't think that is like that far beyond the horse and like some of the other
well
things.
Also, you know,
which is
this...
Charlie's point, by the way. He's like, why is my vision getting negged and everyone else gets to see stuff?
Yeah, no, Charlie's right in that moment.
He is.
But also, this is around the period of time, obviously, the sort of meta aspect of it was that people, Lost was a show that even in its first season people had already started to try to really dissect and love the sort of intricacy of the mystery. So it feels like a big swing, but it also feels very Lost to just be like, all right, cool. Let's just keep putting more stuff in there for them to just think about it, man.
There's definitely an Easter egg in this episode that we'll revisit in our official podcast check-in that they mentioned on the podcast, but it's really early for them to be mentioning it in a like not spoiler podcast. But at this point in the production of the show, the everybody involved like kind of wants you to lean in and look really close at the show now.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, so they know that people are watching closely,
right?
Which is why they take big, which I think informs a lot of what they're doing in season two.
Yeah, which is interesting because I think sometimes it can allow them to jump between certain character beats that don't have to necessarily be said. But on the other hand, like Neil was pointing out with this episode, it becomes really obvious when the flashbacks kind of divorce from whatever is happening on the island. And yeah, in terms of this past couple of episodes, we've, you know, returned to flashbacks from our original season one lost characters and tried to deepen them a little bit in their new season two context. And Charlie, I like his island storyline because it is, especially viewed through what we were talking about last week about trying to anchor his recovery to something, to like some sort of relationship, having the rawness of, you know, once basically being a father figure to a baby taken away from him and kind of mirroring that sort of with his other life reads well to me. But the problem is the flashbacks all have the predictable ending where each scene's going to end with the heel turn with the guy who's most addicted to heroin. And that's not just with Lost. That's with a lot of drug fiction is, you know, that, you know, when the brother comes back and says he's going to get clean and you look at the clock and you're halfway through the episode, that by the time you get to the end of the episode, something's going to be up with the brother. So that kind of like takes the air out of the sails. But otherwise, Island of Mystery, I like our characters hanging out. It's not that I don't like the threat of the others, and it's not that I don't appreciate Jack having to run off into the island every once in a while, but the non-Charlie being distressed here stuff I really enjoy. Stretching Sawyer always fun. And then Locke sort of chafing, I guess, under his, I don't know. Do you guys feel, what's Locke's headspace before he picks up the Charlie Claire cause in this episode?
I don't know what this question is. What is Locke's headspace before he picks up the Charlie Claire cause in this episode?
Well, it seems like it's sort of fallout from what happened last week, where it's like Charlie and Claire are no longer close. And so Locke, and we've seen him do this with Claire previously, he steps in and wants to be more of like a father figure to Claire, it seems, instead of Charlie wanting to be the father figure to Aaron. And I think that's what sort of pushes Charlie sort of down the slide, if you will, is when he sees Locke and Claire and they're having a nice time, because Locke is a nice guy for the most part, as far as I can tell. Yeah. And I think that's like, it's sort of just sort of the ebb of what happened last week. And, it just sort of sets, you know, maybe sets Charlie's brain up to create some of these visions, if that's what's happening.
Yeah, I think the, I don't know, Locke just gets his way, like, you know, a little paternal, you know, like, he has his pet projects, and, you know, his little soggy friend Walt is the thing. So right. he's like, oh, I can be Uncle Johnny to this baby over here, that's fine. You know, I think John versus Charlie is actually kind of strong in this episode, and you know, does Locke have a leg to stand on with Charlie when he's going around gooping people and doing stuff with drugs? I don't know, but I do think that the whole, like, there's also what's more important than John's relationship with Claire and Aaron is, like, the fact that he was the one who sort of, like, helped Charlie kind of get clean in the first place, right? And so, you know, maybe it's really unfair for him to feel, like, invested in Charlie's journey to wellness. But he is. And I think a lot of what he says is right. You know, like, mostly everyone is just like, can you just give Claire some space and time? And Charlie's just like, oh, fuck no. Mm-hmm. You know, Claire's like,
no, I need to talk to her right now.
Claire's like, dude, literally, like, just for now, like, I would be like, get the fuck out of here, dude, entirely. But Claire's like, just for now, please, Charlie, can you give me some space and time? And he's like, sure, no problem. I'm going to harass you and your baby for the rest of the episode, but no problem. It's fine. I can do this. It's fine.
I'll be back in 10 minutes.
Yeah. Oh, is that long enough? I don't know. I do appreciate Kate, like, sort of defending Claire in this episode. I liked that. I feel like sometimes, like, people forget their friends on this island. And Kate deciding to be interested in something. I always like it when Kate is interested in something other than Jack and Sawyer. It's always more interesting when that's true of Kate. So I like that for her in this episode.
But in true Lost fashion, she was also very interested in both Jack and Sawyer in this episode at one point.
I mean, true. But at least not only interested in that.
Get okay. You a Kate that can do both.
Yeah, I have a really important question.
Yes.
If you are trying to date someone on this island, would you do laundry with them? Or would you help them arrange their tarp? Because helping someone arrange their tarp honestly seems like the number one, like, are you new in town?
Oh, right. And then you can get a tour of the, like, yeah, the tent.
Can I help drape that tarp for you?
But then again, if you're doing laundry,
yeah,
you could be alone in the hatch where there is a bunk bed.
True. Also, I don't know who put on the music that was playing while they were doing laundry, like if Hurley did that or whoever was on, like, button duty did it, but it was Papa Loves Mambo was playing, and I was like, listen, Hurley, if I want to make a move on Libby, I would definitely put Papa Loves Mambo on the radio for sure. So that's a good
I bet Hurley can dance.
I bet Hurley loves Mambo. I bet.
Yeah. Yeah. I bet he can make that happen.
I have a follow. Well, sorry, Dave, you didn't answer. Would you do laundry or would you drape a tarp?
Oh, I mean, probably drape a tarp, just because there seems to be so many tarps. I don't know. That seems, I don't know why.
Dave's but going also, on volume. Like,
I'm going on volume and success
rate. How many girls can I drape a tarp for?
Yeah, Dave helped 25 people put up their tarps today.
Wow, he's so helpful.
They're just, you know, there's no monogamy on the Island of Mystery, I guess, unless you're married.
Unless you're Rose and Bernard.
Follow-up question. Through the eyes of 2020, when Ana Lucia deploys the really regrettable phrase, "You hitting that?" my 2020 self is like, Ana Lucia doesn't care if Jack is single. Ana Lucia cares if Kate is single. So that's my headcanon for what's going on here.
Yeah. All I read is
got the tarp plan.
Yeah, that's true. She's like, "You hitting that? Do you think Kate wants to help arrange my tarp? I don't know. Maybe." Yeah.
Do I have to be the person on this island that points out how hot everybody is so they sleep with me? Because I will.
I will do that.
Ana Lucia, saying
attention,
what we were all
thinking. Find everybody hot. Just, you know, when you get around to finding me hot, I'm here finding you attractive.
Please forget that I shot Shannon.
Exactly.
I would not only... So my answer to this prompt is, like, it would definitely be laundry. And not only would I use laundry as an excuse to, like, try to hit on someone, I would also just constantly be volunteering to do people's laundry if it meant I could just hang out in the hatch.
Right. Because is there AC in the hatch?
Exactly. I think there is, because there's that one shot of Locke. It's the Tabula Rasa shot where the camera spins around Locke in this episode. And Terry O'Quinn looks so hot and sweaty. And I was just like, I do not want to be on that beach most of the time. I want to be in the hatch where it looks cool and temperature controlled. So
yeah, I don't even care about the alarm.
No, not at all. This is I think this is like 10 consecutive weeks of me being like, why isn't everyone always in the hatch all the time? That's why.
So it's like, I'm going to do everyone's laundry and it's going to be like speed dating. You come down, I help you with your laundry.
Nice.
We flirt it out and we see what happens.
You try on perhaps one of Shannon's old tops and we'll see where we're going. That's 100% a Shannon top, right? Like, come on.
I mean, or it's from Rugby Shirt Girl, maybe.
Or some other, like, dead cute girl. Some dead cutie. But, like,
oh, no.
Either way.
It's Joanna.
Joanna's dress.
All right. P.S. Did you see how quickly Charlie dove into that ocean to save that baby?
Mm-hmm.
I did. Remember you when Charlie claimed he couldn't swim to save Joanna? I do.
Wow.
Oh.
That's how you know what I was thinking about. A vision.
Maybe, or that's how you know Charlie just really hated Joanna.
Joanna was no baby. that scene is an incredible, I think, use of like dodging ADR, because he's swimming and the camera's like bobbing in and out of the water, and there's no way you're going to actually hear him say Aaron as clear as you do, but it comes through clear as day with almost no sloshing effects. I was like, hey, ADR, I see you, and missed entirely that Charlie said he couldn't swim earlier.
Are you saying Papa loves ADR?
Papa loves ADR.
Papa loves tarps. Yeah, so that's a lesson.
My island persona is getting creepier as we proceed through Lost.
So we proceed through this
like
episode,
I'm just making practical decisions at each turn, but the path draws me deeper into the jungle.
The old speaking tarp of, draper, Dave Gonzalez.
The
yes.
old tarp draper. Yeah. Speaking of stuff in the jungle, Mr. Echo's out there marking his favorite trees, which I think is a fantastic way to pass the time if you're caught on a jungle.
It's a hell of a hobby.
He's like, you know what? This one. I like this one.
This sort of makes me want to, like, have, and this is not coming, I'm sorry, the spoiler alert, but an episode where they check in on, like, what people do with their time, what the other, like, 40 however many people are left, like what are Rose and Bernard up to most of the time?
The other 48 people. Yeah. What about all the, like, various skills people, like, picked up? Like, how
like, this whole camp seems to be functioning pretty well, so, like, what's going on? Like,
how good has so-and-so got at digging, like, latrine.
What is a day in the life of rugby shirt girl is what I'm saying.
And I feel like the Lindelof now, like when you brought up your Alterna idea for like, what if Charlie's flashback had been about his journey through his faith? I'm like, well, you know that that's what Lindelof would do now for sure. Like Lindelof does such good work around religion and faith. And I just like, oh, I'm like thinking of like all he could have done with Charlie and Catholicism if he did it now. And it seems amazing. And similarly, well, and I think he would do like a a rugby shirt girl episode.
Well, and that was, I think, one of the things about Lost, or is one of the things about Lost, is that it constantly feels like it wants to touch religious ideas, but we have yet to see it really like hug or embrace religious stuff. Like there's a lot of religious iconography that we've seen, but this actually does feel like the first episode where they've sort of put religion, you know, as a central piece of the narrative of the episode, you know?
Do you think they're consciously wary of doing that, lest they give the impression they're tipping their hand as to, like, the nature of the island?
Well,
if they're like, we live in a story world that's Christian forward dominant, are they afraid the audience will start making, you know, purgatory or something?
I don't know if that's what they were thinking, but I definitely think that is what kept the fuel in the in the eternal engine that is the theory, the purgatory theory about Lost. So it's like that. That's why that lasted so long, because you get these like religious things that pop up and people are like, oh shit.
Oh, that's specific to Catholicism, you know? Not Zoroastrianism.
You put Jesus in one episode and, but yeah, I think that it's
Jesus
like
in one episode.
Like I said, what we've seen so far is like there's a lot of religious iconography, but religion only sort of seems to pop up when we're in Charlie episodes, because he's the only one, right? Unless there's an obvious one that I'm forgetting. Echo and Charlie, yeah. But that's the only time that we get really dig into, you know, like religious themes and stuff. So far.
I still think you're coming around to what I was trying to say. Or no, we're all coming around to what I was trying to say at the beginning, which is I feel like this fire plus water is a bigger swing in terms of the island testing people than we've had, like a direct island testing people situation that's called out by Charlie when he's like, why is mine weird? You know, because we have horse. And I would The show is getting much more confident, and I think letting the island be weirder, which could be positive or could be negative.
And I think it's also a thing that is kind of frustrating, because like we have this episode where Charlie is having some sort of vision, or is being, you know, maneuvered, I guess, in some way by the island. And we know that it's not because he's using drugs. But everyone else doesn't know that, so it constantly has to be about whether, like, all the, like, interpersonal drama of it is Charlie doing drugs, where it's like, I'm standing over here, like, screaming, why is Charlie having weird visions if he's not on drugs? Like, shouldn't we be asking that question? But, you know.
Is anybody else having visions? Can we all just have a vision powwow and, like, share some information here?
Yeah.
Has anybody else seen Wet Waltz?
Yeah,
apparently they've been sharing those stories because Charlie knows about it.
I wish the episode was more about the visions and the religion than the drugs in the end. But otherwise, yeah, this is the upside of having Jack Bender do your Charlie episodes a lot, because you still get like really great performances and stuff. So it's tough.
Yeah. And you all every butties.
Can we talk about our Charlie problem?
Sure.
Okay, so, well, I'll just say this, that, like, now that Shannon is gone, right, I think that Charlie is the character that is, like, the most complicated in this rewatch. Or I will just say the most different from our, perhaps, original embrace of him. Because Charlie as a character is one that I don't remember being a problem when I was watching fresh off my love of Lord of the Rings and my glowing feelings about Dominic Monaghan and being like at a different place in the culture than I am now. I was talking to some of our listeners in our Patreon Slack. So if you want to join the conversation in there, you can join our Patreon for $1. But anyway, I dropped this article that is now paywalled partially, but this article that I love to read and reread called Your Princess is in Another Castle, Nerds and Misogyny, it's written by Arthur Chu, originally in 2014, and it was right after the Santa Barbara shootings. And Arthur Chu, who's like a Jeopardy champ, you might know him, this is a Daily Beast article, but he writes all about this archetype, which Charlie isn't quite, because he's like quote unquote a cool rock star, but like, let's face it, Charlie is kind of like, he's the nerdy guy, kind of, you know what I mean? Like, he's, you know, smaller stature and just sort of like, hey guys, what are you doing sort of thing. And Arthur Chu in that article writes about really eloquently about like this arc of like from like Revenge of the Nerds through like Chuck and Big Bang Theory. And it's this whole thing where like the nerdy guy gets the hot girl, like, you know, just because like Revenge of the Nerds, you know, whatever. But then like, you know, Niles Crane and Fraser, Niles is my favorite, one of my favorite characters on television. But like, if you look closer at this archetype, the way there is this like sense of entitlement there that is creepy in a way that wasn't even clear to me until I read that article in 2014. I actually didn't even know all the horrific things that happened in Revenge of the Nerds because I had never seen it until I read that article. But there is an actual sexual assault in that film. But thinking about Charlie in that point of view, I'm like, yeah, I think our perspective of this kind of character who feels there's a part of you for a while in the culture, there was a part of us or all of us who wanted to root for this underdog, right? It was like, okay, for so long in culture, the handsome hot guy gets the girl. Then it's like, what about the nerdy guys and the rise of nerd culture and all that sort of stuff? And now I think we're in a place where like, it doesn't, honestly, if you watch high school focused stuff now, which is sort of where these archetypes, exist the most, the message I see the most from high school set stuff now, whether it's like, sorry, the cops are coming because I'm talking about teens, whether it's, To All the Boys I Loved Before or Booksmart or like a bunch of other teen focused stuff that's like popular right now, it's like, as long as you're chill, like as long as you're nice and you vibe well with others, you're worth rooting for. And it doesn't matter, that social strata doesn't matter the way that it used to in all of our other sort of fiction. And so, you know, if basically like if the island had a football team, Charlie wouldn't be on it, right? He'd be in band. And so like Charlie's in that archetype position, but that archetype is no longer one that we are automatically rooting for. We're not like, oh, Charlie deserves Claire because he's the nerd and the underdog. And I no longer feel that way because I've seen maybe too many toxic nerds on the internet feel entitled, and like I'm no longer default going to be rooting for those guys. As much as I love nerds and consider myself a nerd and like whatever. So, did any of that make sense? My whole yes. journey through this archetype?
In two ways. One, yeah. Charlie is one of the least chill people on yes. the island.
Yes.
So that's true. Also, yeah, I think it's easy to read Charlie differently now because, I don't know, I feel like maybe this is just me getting older, maybe it's me getting older, plus all of the things that have happened in our culture and at least the last 3 or 4 years, if not longer, is like you sort of, when I look at a male character's actions, I'm always sort of reassessing, like, how did I think about this at the time? How should I think about this now that I am older and wiser? And Charlie's glomming on to Claire is a real mixed bag. So, like, there are parts of it that are very sweet. There are parts of it obviously that are very creepy. So yeah, it's less of a, I don't know if Charlie bugged me when I was first watching the show. I don't remember having strong feelings about him either way, but now it's like, yeah, I can see how Charlie, you know, not great. He wouldn't be written this way now though.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. I think, exactly. Yeah, it's a whole bunch of the assumed shorthand that has changed mm-hmm. and that makes it feel weird. And I mean, there's ways Charlie, I think, could be the same and you could still tell the same story and just like make it clearer. Like there's a whole bunch of absences in this story. Like, I feel like I'm kind of missing a lot of Clara's perspective. I feel like this episode really changes moods depending on how you feel about baptism. Like, Charlie might have saved Aaron if that's your belief structure. And in which case, you know, maybe it's a little more forgiving. But then, you know, I just think it's extremely weird to snatch a baby while everybody's sleeping and walk towards the ocean. And I think it's a really weird that, you know, he sets a fire to do it. And then afterwards, his only consequences is Jack being like, "Oh, you're not going to do that again, are you, buddy?" And I'm like, he killed somebody earlier. What makes you think that this is like a, you know,
he is sort of de-escalating
pattern?
Just trying to dunk a baby in the ocean is less than killing somebody.
I mean, that might kill a baby.
No, I think you may have nailed
it. Babies are fragile.
You may have nailed it when you said we needed more of Claire's perspective in this episode, because it really does feel like the episode is just all dunking on Charlie. And also, I think the episode wants us to think at the end that Charlie may have still accomplished something by, like, making Claire feel a little bit better. You know, because I think Claire doesn't really seem to have any context for the religious stuff. But when Mr. Echo sort of breaks it down for her in his super smooth and simple way, it would make me feel better, too, if I were lost on an island, be like, "Oh, cool. You mean you just hit me with some water and we're good?"
I really want, like,
you know,
I still really want Libby to have, like, a therapy tent with, like, light hours, right? Like, Libby doesn't need to be working 24/7, but I really want Libby to have her therapy tent. I would help, Hurley will help her drape a tarp for that tent as well.
Like, and Hurley, you know, could also probably do, like, scheduling. He's very supportive.
Oh, yes.
He's also good, like, at spreadsheets and he did the census.
Yeah, he did do the census, but I would like Mr. Echo's, like, Island Funtime Church to be like, to have like a counseling session tent, like, right next to, like, sort of lighten the load. But I just, like, I loved actually the way that he both, I mean, Echo is just like one of the best characters ever, but like, I love the way that he talked to both Charlie and Claire, and like, just Echo saying like, "This is not the way," to Charlie, and also like, to Claire very clearly, like, "That's not what I meant, and I'm really sorry he took that way."
Yeah. But, and how, like, immediate he is with that, being like, "Hey, by the way, that's not how I saw that all happen.
I wasn't like, take the baby."
Start a fire.
Take the baby.
In the dead of night. Do that. That's the way, Charlie. Yeah. So, Echo, like, and then I just really, like, I love your point, Dave, about needing more of Claire's perspective, because, like, I don't feel like they really knew what to do with Claire's backstory either. And so they were hard pressed to give Claire, like, fully disappeared for much of season one. Claire is a character I feel like we don't have a lot of access to, and I really liked the scene where she's talking to Echo, and you see, first of all, this is very important to note that Emily DeRaven's hair looks amazing this episode. Secondly, I just really like the scene where she's talking to Echo about, like, you know, if my baby gets baptized, like, am I left behind or all this? And then, like, her performance in it was really good. And it's just like, there's so much more potential fodder, I think, for this, like, scared young mother.
Sure. Like, what's Claire's religious background?
Yeah.
You know?
What's going on here? So, yeah. You could have even
isn't
done,
she
like,
into
a,
mysticism?
You could have done a Charlie Claire joint episode with, like, her journey through spirituality through her youth and his, and then, like, where we land and stuff like that. I think that could have been cool. If Son and Jim have to share times on episodes, why not Charlie and Claire? So, like, you know.
She's also at the center of, like, Charlie is worried about her, Locke's worried about her, and now Echo's worried about her. And it's like, if you can't build a character with those three rocks around you, that's, I don't know, a missed opportunity, I feel like. Because you could talk about anything to one of those three characters.
I have another question for you guys.
Yeah.
Go.
What is the best present, Christmas or birthday? I was going to say Christmas, but anyway, the best present someone ever gave you. I don't mean like the most expensive present, because, like, okay, so like Charlie, when he was like making a lot of money has a one hit song, presumably, like, he got given very fancy, expensive things, right? But, like, nothing mattered more to him than the piano that his mom, that his dear old Ma gave him, right, when he was a kid. So, like, what is that? What is the present that you remember that you're like, this was, like, the most thoughtful or the most important or whatever present that I ever got? Is that too personal?
I don't know if I have a good one.
I mean, it's hard with, like, presents. I mean, I think in terms of, like, this is going to sound dumb because a whole bunch of people got this present and it's not personal, but in terms of looking back over my life, the gift that I remember appreciating the most is my grandfather, who was, like, mostly into being a good grandfather. He wasn't into whatever, you know, video game systems or stuff were coming out in the 90s, somehow, like, got on a pre-shipping list or something for Nintendo 64. So we got a Nintendo 64 and Mario 64, like, a week before anybody else, and a couple of weeks, I think, before Christmas or something. It was, like, this big special surprise. And, like, the whole family sat down and played, like, 3D Mario, and then that system led to, like, GoldenEye 64 later on after school, and, you know, Star Wars Shadow of the Empire, I think, also was, like, that first couple of weeks. So, I mean, I'm not going to be super sad if I have to sell my N64 for pot money as an adult, but I, in terms of formative gifts, that was the one.
Yeah.
Okay, so I only have ones that are funny, but in a weird way, that have kind of a funky twist that either makes me look bad or someone in my family look bad. But I'm going to go for it anyway. When I was... Hold on, now I got to look up the date. When I was a teen, this would have been mid-90s, when the... Spice Girls movie came out.
Mm-hmm.
I remember asking for, and this would have been like, you know, what we would do is I would give my brother and I would each make a list for our mom, and she would pass it around to all the grandparents, you know? And this would have been something that was very much at the, like, end of my list, but probably not as far to the end as I would like to remember it. But it was the soundtrack to the Spice World movie, which was the Spice Girls album.
Uh-huh.
This is not the weird part.
Okay.
So my grandmother, who was very old at the time, she was well into her 90s, she proceeded to get me that same CD for my birthday that year, for Christmas that year, for Christmas the next year, and for my birthday a third straight year. I ended up with like 5 copies of that damn thing because my grandma was just sweet and kept going and couldn't figure out how to cross something off the list, apparently. But she was
next thing on the list, Spice World.
She was
next
she
thing
was,
on the list, Spice World.
she was a delightful woman who sort of lost it there at the end, so there you go.
Neil, I'm going to see you next month, and I'm going to bring you a copy of Spice World. You know, that's one of Diana's favorite movies. We should watch it for a movie club sometime. All
we
right,
should watch it for a movie club.
Yeah. And for me, I mean, I think I just had a very similar experience to Charlie where, I don't know if I've ever told this story, but that, growing up, like, we used to have Christmas at my grandma's house. There were, like, my grandma had, like, there was this living room area. The cousins and my sister and I were all sleeping in these back bedrooms. We were allowed to go to a certain place on the stairs, but not cross it until it was time for, like, everyone to open presents. So you could, like, see how many presents were under the tree. You could, like, see what was going on in there, but you could not go in until it was time.
Oh, and, yeah. I had a similar move, but we had to, like, my brother had to hold my legs and I had to, like, dip my face. You know, it was like hanging off a cliff.
And one year there was an easel there, like an artist's easel, with like a big drawing pad on it. And, like all of us were like, who's that for? Blah, blah, blah. And it was for me. And it was like a very like, Charlie, here's your piano. It was like, I don't know. It was this moment. Like I loved art growing up. I was huge. Like that's all I did all the time. And, it's not what I do anymore, but unless you count this as my art, But, like, it was just one of those things where, like, I hadn't asked for it. I didn't expect it. And here is this, like, thing that was just for me and my, the way that I express myself.
Thanks.
And, yeah. So I will always remember that, that easel as, like,
was, was your family also pleading with you as a young child to save it?
Yes, my father, my father is a doctor. Like, I never saw what his head looked like. It was just like the bottom of his body.
And he was just standing sort of, there like, chopping up human body parts.
Yeah, just like wave an IV bag at me and be like, "Sit, you'll never save us with your art, Joanna." Yeah. Does this put us, is it accent corner time?
Yes, it's the post-show corners time. We're a podcast with many corners at the end. Let's do our accent corner.
Okay, so this is related, right? So we're going to do Sammy Davis, who plays Megan Pace. Not baby Megan Pace, but mom Megan Pace. It's like, Charlie, your piano. Anyway, Sammy Davis. Not Sammy Davis Jr., but Sammy Davis, who plays Megan Pace. Is she Mancunian? Mancunian. I think that's what you call someone from Manchester.
Oh, is she British?
Is she British? Sure, she British.
I'm gonna say no.
No.
Yeah, I'm gonna say no as well.
Okay. So, Charlie, I believe, is supposed to be from Manchester. Yes.
Okay.
He says something like that later. So Charlie, like, the problem with the UK, right, is that there's just so many regional accents. Not a problem, a delight. But Charlie's from Manchester, which is up the north. This woman is British, but she's from the West Midlands, which is in the middle, Kidderminster specifically. To my ear, she does not nail the Mancunian accent. But I would love to hear a real British person weigh in.
So she's country specific, yes.
Yeah.
Region specific, no.
No.
Okay. Right.
It's like if someone from California tried to do a southern accent and failed. That's how I feel. Mm-hmm. About. So anyway,
okay.
That's my accent corner.
Accent corner. Let's keep it up with the corners with our Giacchino corner this week. Do we have any new tracks, Neil?
We do. We get two cues from this episode. We have the opening music, which appears in the soundtrack as Charlie's Dream. Still not quite peak Giacchino here in season two. And then Charlie's theme appears as Charlie's Temptation on the soundtrack.
Ooh.
Eventually. Yeah. I guess maybe Charlie's Dream isn't from the soundtrack and Charlie's Temptation is. I don't understand this fun fact. Either way, it's about Charlie. You figure it out.
Charlie, new Charlie music.
There's also the Kinks.
Here, go ahead.
The Kinks, Your Evil plays, and it's Papa Love. There's a lot of like Papa Love's Mambo and the Kinks, Your Evil, right? Or He's Evil plays in the background of this episode. So there's a lot of like, I don't know, more than usual extra music since Hurley's Discman died.
What do they call that music?
You all,
that
everybody's
comes from the show.
Diegetic music.
Diegetic, yes. Yeah. There we go.
Our Boone Carlisle Memorial Falling Down Award goes to Charlie, who falls into the SERP after being clocked a couple times by Locke.
He also gets
stuck out with a baby.
He gets punched so hard that he needs stitches. I don't know if we've seen that on Lost yet, but in real life, that is also kind of hard to do, is to get punched so hard that you need stitches on your face.
It's also in a similar area of his face where, like, Saeed had to cauterize a wound with gunpowder, right? Like,
that's true.
This is like a section of Charlie's face that just keeps getting brutalized. So yeah, mm-hmm.
it's gonna be real messed up by the time he gets rescued. And Neil, what's our jungle mystery moment?
Well, we talked about this one a lot. It's the hallucination. It's the baptism of Christ by who did the painting? Is it Da Vinci?
Da Vinci.
That is definitely the jungle of mystery moment. Although, quick second place goes to "Don't I know you from somewhere?" which is to my ear the first time anyone said that to another character in at least a long time, if not ever, on this show. Being like, "Have we met before?"
Yeah, I guess like Jack. What does Jack say to Desmond? Or no, Desmond says, "Jack, I know you." Like something mm-hmm. like that, right? Like it's not "Don't I know you from somewhere," but it's similar.
Yep. It probably ends with brother.
Brother. I know you, brother.
Mystery.
I married her. Okay. yeah, and we'll talk a little bit more about Libby in the Storm, but as Dave pointed out, I can't remember if you pointed this out before we started recording, Libby was in the tail section of the plane. So how could Hurley have stepped on her toes when she got on the plane if she was in the tail section of the plane?
There's the tail section.
There's a deleted scene of Hurley running up and down, back and forth. Before they take off.
Where's my seat?
Oh,
don't trust the numbers.
He ran all the way through the airport. And
right,
then
he ran
up and
all
the
way to the back and then came all the way back up to the front.
Really quick moment before we go into the storm. Have you guys seen the TV show Bonanza?
I don't think so.
Okay. I watched it a lot as a kid. This is like this Western show from the 60s. Michael Landon.
I know
House on the Prairie.
I know the tune of the theme song.
But yeah, how does it go?
Isn't it like Bonanza? That's all I know.
Because earlier today, I made a Bonanza joke on Twitter for some reason. I don't know why. That is a show I watch a lot. But there was Michael Landon played a character called Little Joe. But there was another character, sort of like bigger character called Hoss. And that's what one of the kinder things that Sawyer calls Hurley in this episode versus Jabba.
Oh, yeah. Hoss. Being a person who's lived in Texas for 10 years, I believe is more of like an authority figure type of thing. It's like a hoss, like, you know.
I think it's like big guy.
Yeah, you know, like, what I mean? Like big man.
Yeah, big man.
Hoss. You know?
Yeah.
But that could also just be like management.
But I think it's from Bonanza. I could be wrong, but I think it comes from Bonanza. So
I mean,
anyway, Bonanza. Watch it or don't. Watch Lost with us. Storm time? Yes.
Yeah, after the official podcast check-in, here we go. The Lost official podcast started coming out in season 2. I'm going to quote some stuff from it. This is from Damon Lindelof and Carlton Cuse talking to you, the people watching Lost. Damon says, there were a couple of little Easter eggs that we hid in this episode. You know, I think we sort of teased the audience in a previous podcast that there'd be some signage on the building in the scene following the diaper commercial. Carlton Cuse says, yes, well, you know, we try to be subtle, but there actually there is, if you stop, and I don't know whether you can see it, but there's supposed to be a little sign there on the back of the building, which ended up sort of turning out much smaller than we had anticipated in the final cut, that says Widmore Constructure on it. And Damon Lindelof says, yes, that would be Widmore, which is seemingly fairly innocuous, but, you know, I would write it down for those of you who are assembling clues. And Carlton Cuse says, exactly. So that's something, you know, you'll hear more about Widmore, the Widmore Company, in the future. Don't you think? And Damon says, is that the same thing as the Hanzo Foundation and the Dharma Initiative? And Carlton Cuse says, it's not the same as the Hanzo Foundation. And that's the end of that conversation.
So that's where their minds
were at. It's a real trip.
Wow.
Official podcast is a real trip for like going back and listening.
Yeah,
to
they loved putting shit in the show, like just stuff that people would constantly be obsessing over. They really, really, really enjoyed it.
And if you're with us in the calm, write that name down, and we'll see you later on in this podcast if you want to hear a little bit more about Widmore and the Storm after this.
Now is the time on our show where we like to thank our lovely Patreon subscribers. If you are a Patreon subscriber at the $10 level or above, you can do a lot of fun stuff with us, including a movie club monthly watch. This month, we're watching the Drew Barrymore classic Ever After, selected by our pal Neil here.
And Neil's going to tell more embarrassing stories about his family. Yeah.
Woo! join us. Or, you know, at any level, we'd love to see you in our Slack. There's some great conversations going on about Charlie and the show happening in our Patreon Slack. We also like to thank those subscribers at the $10 level, and I'm going to start with a couple of newcomers, Melinda Lim and Stuart Wynn. Thank you guys for joining us. And then some stalwart supporters, Sarah Wolf, Francis Adrian, Kevin Gonzalez, Jay Maggio, Eric Prosis, Arthur Wynn, Scott Rumsey, Richard Hoska, Tracy, Luke Sweet, Sheila Curran, Nate, Anthony Goal, Ralph Helm, Kelsey McKinnell, Chelsea Patchell, Adrian Martinez, and Samuel Fry. Thank you so much.
And I would like to add to that the thanks for Christopher McTeer, Torin, Sally, Sam, Kendall, Abernathy, Thomas Hankins, Tony Rollins, Anna Jackson, Will Nazer, Taylor Hughes, T. Lido, Elisa Love, Savio Wynn, Georgia O'Brien, Eleanor Corkish, Alejandro Villarreal, Rachel Aluli, Cassidy, Leia Rock, Nicholas Ng, and Elizabeth Hines. Thank you very much.
And I would like to thank the following fine humans: Nikki Jones, Brian Moon, Brett Gordon, Simon, Renee Kalb Nyen, Aiden Callis, Liz Gonzalez, Deanna, Jeffrey Post, Sarah Bousman, Marcus Masciarelli, Samba Muteba, Greg Jagger, yeah, okay, Nathan Bodner, Stephanie Hoffman, Lawrence Agleton, Jeff Ziegler, Connor Mufich, Amy H., and Kate Dilligan. Thank you all very much.
And we're back for the storm. Lots of stuff to talk about this week, but I guess we should start with the Widmore thing. When does Widmore actually come into the series?
I just looked it up. Like, it's the season 2 finale.
Okay, yeah, so I was gonna say end of this season.
Good God.
Yeah, so that means at this point, yeah, they're laying this. They're like, I guess they've already decided that Desmond's coming back, probably, right?
Right.
And,
they've
yeah,
already decided out Penny's name.
They have not, they don't know what to do with Michael yet, maybe. Or maybe they've decided. Like, I need to look into this, but I would like to know when they sort of like had, if when they had a writing break or hiatus or whatever for this season. Because, yeah, it feels like they come back and they're like, okay. Well, Henry Gill shows up so soon, guys, 2 episodes. I'm so excited. But Henry Gill shows up, but they didn't have a plan for Henry Gill at that point. But they at least had like right. an other's plan. And mm-hmm. then yeah, and they've got a Widmore plan, I guess. So it's fun. It's fun to know. Fun to know.
Fun to see those things slowly crawling together.
And a Libby plan.
And a Libby plan, as I say.
Oh yeah, like, there we go. Yeah.
They also apparently know that they know that Hurley knows that he knows Libby from fucking the hospital for people who are going through some sort of mental
difficult
situation. Yes.
Difficult times hospital.
Is mental hospital the right thing to say there? What is the right way to say that?
I would say mental institution.
Okay.
I think an okay thing to say.
They were once institutionalized together.
Yeah, like
for
Hurley
mental health
it,
issues.
Hurley calls it other things that we don't call it anymore, but like
exactly.
I think we could say mental institution. We find that out in Dave, which is like 4 episodes from now. 4 or 5
yeah.
episodes from now.
And is that ever explained? I remember.
No, it's a thread. It's a thread that's not like.
Yeah, because you get Dave in episode 18, and then 3 minutes is the Michael episode, which is where he takes out Libby.
Right. So, Dave, we find out that Libby was in the mental institution with Hurley, and then 1, 2, 3, 4 episodes later, she's dead. So,
this really feels like they don't know the end of Michael, and they don't know the end of Henry Gale yet, then.
Yeah.
Because that seems like really dumb planning if you're going to lay that much backstory.
No, I don't think, if they knew what they were going to do with Cynthia Watrous's character, I don't think that they would have given her this scene in this episode. And I think they wanted to like bring her back later, but she had another show. I think there was like more they wanted, because there's also like Libby, like Desmond's boat is called the Elizabeth, right? It's Libby's boat. Like mm-hmm. there's that whole Desmond Libby off-island connection, but we never find out, like, it's clear she like knew Hurley and had like a crush seemingly on Hurley. Who wouldn't? He's the best. But like, did she follow him to Australia? Like, what was she doing in Australia? Like, what are the Libby? I have a lot of Libby questions that the show never answers. So season 2 is really like big for that. You know, there's like a lot of Mr. Echo stuff brewing. There's a lot of stuff that never come, you know, the like Ana Lucia, what would it take to build an army question? That doesn't really come to fruition at all, ever.
It has already been forgotten.
Yeah. And, well, yeah. No, they're walking around like, in theory, Jack and Ana Lucia walking around could be like, and we would put our fire pits here, and our archers would be on those trees, you know, like, maybe they're doing
Light the trench!
But you know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of season two stuff that they're like, maybe this, and they're like, not that. And then Michael Emerson shows up and just rules, and they're like, ooh, what if we want to follow this guy for a really long
What if
time?
This guy is everything?
What if this guy is actually lost? So, yeah.
Some sort of person of interest.
Yeah.
Hey!
What's the other show that he's on right now? Evil?
Evil, yeah.
Oh, yeah,
some
Evil.
Sort of evil person of interest.
Matt Patches claims that an episode of Evil was the best episode of television he watched last year.
Evil is reportedly a very good show, and I need to catch up on it.
Oh.
Well, Michael Emerson is definitely a very good actor, so it's not
from
a stretch.
The Kings. It's from The Kings, who did The Good Wife and et cetera. And
it's part of my all-access subscription for my Picard.
Ooh,
so I might as well
maybe I'll watch it, too.
Guys, let's watch it. All just
get the CBS All Access juices going.
Guys, we found a new show we liked, and it's on CBS. How long has it been since that happened?
Question mark. All right. I have a question about Charlie using. Something that we've heard from, like, a lot of, like, when people have been emailing us about Charlie or when we've been discussing Charlie, there is this, like, shared, like, sort of Mandela effect, Berenstain Bears remembrance that Charlie relapses and uses again this season. But my question is, like, do you think, I think he doesn't actually.
No, I think clearly he's not.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think that's what really brings him to that moment, that shot at the end where he's looking dark. Because imagine you're Charlie and you're going through something crazy. You know, you're going through something that seems to you to be just way out there, almost akin to Kate seeing a horse. And you know that you're not using drugs, but no one else believes you. I think that's where Charlie lands at the end, which is like, I know what I did was wrong, but also I'm still kind of mad that no one's believing this very real thing that's happening to me.
Right.
Now that you bring that up, that's interesting. I always assumed that he had gone back to using. Him going back to the statues this time reads as, like, time to break another statue. But otherwise, for me, it reads weird that he has been squirreling away these statues and not using, like, just keeping his thing there.
I think it's a security blanket. I think he's not using. I think it's a security blanket. It's just sort of like, I both want to know that this is here if I really need it. And also, it matters to me that I can resist it. It's here and I can resist it. And that's something that I feel good about, you know?
I think that's great, but it clashes with what we were talking about earlier, what the assumptions are at this time in television of a heroin addict who is squirreling away his heroin.
No, but he's not behaving like he's using heroin.
Like, that's what Neil's saying, is that's supposedly the tension of, like, the thing. I mean, otherwise it's a straight up, you know, like, island hallucination, which seems like a big swing. But at least I get now, and you guys are probably right, that he's not using. But my first time watching it, I just assumed if Charlie has a secret hidey hole he's going to every once in a while, that he was using heroin again.
I think he's not using. So that's why.
That's fair. We don't see him using it, and we don't hear anybody say he's using it who has seen more than we, the audience, has. So I feel that's a safe assumption.
Yeah, I mean, I think the audience or the show needs us to have the drugs in our mind, because the point of tension between Charlie and Locke, and then probably even Charlie and Jack sort of at the end there, is that they're not quite sure whether he's using or not. But I feel like if he was going to be using again, they'd show that to the audience, because we're also seeing the visions, which are kind of out there. So it's like, if they're only showing us the visions, I feel like that is Lost sort of telling us, like, we're the only ones that get to know that Charlie is actually going through this for real. Everyone else is just going to think he's on drugs, and that's the tension of the episode.
Well, apparently no relapse, though, which is...
Not yet. I mean, I'm curious now to watch very carefully to see if we ever get evidence that Charlie was relapsing, because I think I agree with Joanna, but But I, of course, don't remember what happens in between now and when Charlie is gone. So
I don't think,
we'll
like,
see.
I don't think he, yeah, I don't think he's like behaving in the same
when
like
Charlie swims again.
Yeah, he does. God damn it! Not only that, he's like he has a flashback to be like greatest swimmer in my village, sort of thing. Like fuck you, Charlie. Yeah. You could have saved Joanna. I know you could have. But he like maybe he's too spaced out on heroin to save Joanna. But like. That's the thing is like he's not presenting as a heroine like in like the sort of my understanding of what a heroine user presents as, and then we don't ever see him go through like another detox, right?
Well, but even in this episode there are flashbacks where Charlie's on heroin, but it's not like we're watching him use heroin.
I don't know. True. I think the show is not as clear as it might be, but I don't think he's using it. And I think we're supposed to see that smash of the statue as him being like, fine, if everyone just assumes I'm doing it anyway, why don't I just do it? And he's really struggling with it in that moment. And that's, of course, when Locke comes upon him. Mm-hmm. But like, you know.
Or maybe he's thinking, my mind is broken. Maybe if I do some heroin, it'll fix it. Or maybe if I do some heroin, at least I'll forget about these crazy visions that are happening.
The reason Echo's marking trees is for his church, right? Like, he's about to
yeah.
his church.
Yeah, okay. Which is why I bleeped out you saying church.
Did I say church?
You said Echo's church, but it's okay. It's bleeped.
Oh.
When did I say church?
49 minutes into the podcast.
No, I meant that like...
You said Echo's church.
When I said Echo's happy fun time... Island Church?
Yeah,
yeah,
it would
I was
be right
like,
next to...
Oh, I was just talking, like, I wasn't talking...
You said, no, you said right next to his Happy Fun Time Island Church should be Libby's therapy tent.
Yeah, I wasn't talking literally...
Okay, I'll leave it in. Okay. In that case, I did not bleep it out.
Metaphorically.
It just seemed like you were like, there's a place, Echo's Church.
No, I meant like, I was talking like a tent sort of thing. Like
they'd have like a shared office space.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Yes, yeah. I was doing the lurey jokey thing where I wanted to bring up him marking his favorite trees as something weird in the column and not have to talk about it again.
Well, I was like, why? I was like, you know why he's marking trees. What are you talking about? Okay.
It seems weird in this episode.
It's just a weird hobby. You know, like yeah. I said, we need to know more about the hobbies people have developed since they've been on the island for 50 days.
Yeah, Neil yes-anded my whole joke.
Okay,
it was very
right.
good.
Sorry.
Okay, so there was no bleeped church, and yes, I was talking about Echo.
Okay, I was talking euphemistically about a church.
Got it.
Not because he never finishes his church, so there never is a church. You know what I mean?
It becomes right. a sweat
well,
lodge
also,
at some point, I believe.
Oh, right. John's going to goop whatever he can.
It gets
you know what
repurposed
I mean?
For gooping.
Goops when he can. That's why Echo's looking at like the burnt area at the end. It's because he's like, Hugh, I will build my church. And he will.
Easier to clear out. I think that maybe... mm-hmm. I think maybe Charlie has really accomplished all of his goals this week. He made Claire feel slightly better. Like, slightly safer. I guess from the afterlife
as the kid
and gave Echo a perfectly burnt square or rectangle for his church.
Burnt rectangle.
I looked down in my rewatch this afternoon. What is Saeed doing when like Charlie starts his fire? His like really bad CGI fire.
It looks like they're building some sort of structure. Like he and one of the nameless.
Yeah, are, in a red shirt, are building
yeah.
something.
They're lifting something?
Yeah,
they're like, we need help lifting this. But and Charlie's like, no. He's like, all right, we'll just try harder.
Yeah, it's like they're building a wall or something out of a piece of fuselage. Like, it looks like
this,
a heavy thing.
This goes to, like there's two large deleted scenes, I think, from this episode, according to Lostpedia. None of them seem to really deal with this, but it really seems like at some point their intention was there will be a mighty duel here, right? Like, if Annalisa and Jack are, like, you know, walk in the perimeter and Saeed's building a wall, like, doesn't this seem like we're preparing for war?
It's hard for me to say that Saeed is building a wall.
Okay.
Based on, like...
is he building, like, a Trump-level wall, which is just, like, flat?
His wall has already fallen over into Mexico. I don't know. It's hard to... It's dark, and Saeed gives us, like, zero context. So it's really hard to know. He could have been doing what Dave would have been doing, which is now that he no longer has a girlfriend, he's
just helping somebody else
helping
set up their
tarp. Bunch of people put up their little huts.
Oh, a consolation.
So that he can fill the hole in his heart.
What do you call that? A rebound tarp.
He's on his rebound tour.
He's rebound tarping with some random dude from camp. Okay. All right.
Yeah, I don't know. It is interesting though. It's like what if they really wanted to go and explore this idea of like them fortifying their beach or something? I think just the layout of the island that they eventually land on makes that terrible idea.
Right, because Ethan came up out of the water, so what could right, like Saeed, you already learned this lesson.
And the whole idea about the caves was that's where they would be safe, is like they could defend themselves in the caves. So if Jack and Ana Lucia were really serious about this army, we'd be getting more cave stuff.
Or like the hatch, which has exactly two entrances, right?
Mm-hmm. One of which is takes you a long time to climb down.
Mm-hmm. You gotta yeah.
It's easy to get shot when you're climbing down a hole and someone's shooting from below.
Ana Lucia should dig another one of her tiger pits, but just at the bottom of the hatch shaft, right? So like if you're going down the hatch shaft and you think you know where the bottom is, but then surprise, Ana Lucia has made another
false
tiger
bottom.
Pit. Yeah.
It's all spikes.
So do we think like it used to be the season 2 conclusion was on this side of the island?
I think so. Like, well, that's what the season 3, you know, there's that season 3 shootout on the beach with Bernard and Jin and like Hurley and the VW bus and stuff like that. That's sort of like an incursion of the beach camp. And I wonder if their plan mm-hmm. for season 2 was an incursion of the beach camp. And instead they decided to do a rando dock we've just decided is on the island, right? Like, instead.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like one of those things where, and it's weird to think that Lost would have had this problem, but like you lose a location, so you have to just like figure out a different location.
Yeah.
But I don't know if that's necessarily a problem Lost would have had in season 2. It feels like, I don't know, do you think it was the fact that they wanted to bring Desmond back that ends that sort of break? Because he doesn't come back until the finale, right?
No, but they already know if they're planting Widmore, they already know that's going to happen.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Okay.
So it seems like they have a vague idea of where they're heading, but it's leading to a others confrontation that's more like a Lord of the Flies war or something. Lord of the Flies doesn't have two groups of people, it has one group of people. It has a war between two people, like some other story. Anyway, before we head off, I wanted to share with you guys, I bought a Lost action figure, and it's of Shannon.
I can't believe these you are did the mix.
Speaking of Saeed's former girlfriend.
Yeah, these are the McFarlane action figures. If you want to look it up, it's hilarious to me because, okay, series one for season one. Locke, yes, understand. Kate, absolutely. Jack, of course. Hurley, yeah, sure. Charlie, yeah, they're all main characters. Shannon is the concluding person of that group. Not Sawyer, not Boone, but Shannon. And of the six action figures of the series one, Shannon is the only one who is posed lying down in a bikini. With the three phrases,
in fairness, was a very Shannon thing to do, but also was not the only thing Shannon did, just for reference.
It's true. It comes with sunglasses add-ons, which is good because she's suntanning, but it does seem kind of morbid because her eyes are permanently closed, much like Shannon on Lost. So for all I know, I have a dead body Shannon action figure. But they're super interesting. I forgot these came with a quote-unquote full-scale replica of things. So this one comes with Rousseau's map. Hurley's came with a winning lottery ticket with the numbers on it. Charlie's came with a drive shaft ring, which we get to see a little bit of in this episode. It's pretty cool. And Jack's came with like a full-scale replica of Kate's mugshot. Kate's came with a quote-unquote full-scale replica of a toy airplane, which I feel is just a normal-sized toy airplane. But yeah, Sawyer...
Wait, is it the same toy airplane from the show?
I mean, I think it's probably one that they, like, recreated for it, but I wish it was. I guess I had to buy the Kate action figure to find out.
I think I want to buy the Kate action figure for a lot of reasons now.
Do it, yeah. They come with authentic sound clips from the show, which could or could not be good phrases... My favorite one of Shannon is, she says, "You want my information? Name Shannon Rutherford, age 20, address Crap Hole Island." And that's definitely something you want your action figure saying to self-identify. People are like, "What's that action figure?" And I press the button and it just introduces itself as living on Crap Hole Island, which is where she died. Hey, Shannon action figures. The world of Lost is pretty great. Also, guys, if you are interested in action figures that have more meaning behind them, the Lost auction for that we've been pimping on this podcast is currently going on. When you hear this, you're going to have like two or three more days in which to participate. I'm not telling you what I'm bidding on because I want to win, but I'm in there.
I didn't know that. That's so exciting. I'm rooting for you. I'm rooting mostly for the auction, but I'm also rooting for you. So,
well, you know, hopefully if the worst case scenario, I don't really win anything, but I get to raise some money for cancer research. That's the way to be. And have some Lost stuff
as
well.
I'm going to go bid on something right now.
Sweet. All right. Until next week, Neo, where are we going on the island next week?
Ooh, next week's a fun one. It's called The Long Con, and it's a Sawyer episode.
Oh, yeah. Getting in for some more con, man. Looping back to Sawyer. Until then, where can people find more of your work online? Let's start this week with Neil Miller.
Well, you can get at me over at the filmschoolrejects.com or on Twitter at Rejects. Don't forget to follow the show at Storm Podcast, where we have all kinds of fun stuff.
And Joanna Robinson.
You can find me on vanityfair.com. You can listen to my podcast, Little Gold Men, where I talk about going to the Oscars and everything I did there. That was a cool thing that I did this weekend, I guess. You can find me on Twitter at Joe Wrote This.
And I'm Dave Gonzalez. You can find me on Twitter at DA7E. You can also find me on the Fighting in the War Room podcast. And here weekly, being the person whispering in your ear, telling you that we're rooting for you. Do not fall down.